The next discussion topic was management of rectal cancer, and specifically the use of neoadjuvant chemoradiation therapy, which is currently the focus of NSABP trial R04, comparing in a 2x2 randomization capecitabine to continuous infusion 5-FU with or without oxaliplatin along with radiation therapy. Dr. Joel Tepper began the discussion by commenting on the selection of endpoints in trials like R04.
Survival is a hard endpoint only because it takes an awful long time to get there, and so that's very hard. Past CR is, although there is variability in past CR, and it's heavily dependent on how hard the pathologist looks, it's somewhat dependent on how long after the completion of radiation the surgery is done. It is still, I think, probably the best endpoint that we have. People have talked about the issue of defining patients with only minimal microscopic disease left in the rectum, and if you could quantitate that in some well-defined way, I'd like to see that being incorporated into it. But as of yet, I don't think we really know how to do that. So I'd like to see some other measures. There is subjectivity in the definition of past CR. It's heavily dependent on the pathologist.
Should we be looking more? We're doing this in breast cancer. We're looking at the tissue. We're doing it in lung cancer. Should we be looking more at the tissue and maybe studying biologics that way, the way Chris Willett did?
We clearly should be studying it, and not just for the use of biologics, but in a broader sense. And so at UNC right now, we have a study. We're biopsying these patients beforehand. We're getting tissue. We're saving those for microarray. But we're also doing some biopsies very shortly after initiation of therapy because we think that it's very likely that the treatment is going to change the whole expression environment that you have, and to understand what's happening during therapy may also be very important. So we clearly need much more biological information.
And what are the interventions you're looking at?
Well, we had an intervention that we're probably abandoning, looking at the use of PS341, which is bortezomib. That has, in our looking at our expression, the hypothesis going in was that based on both in vitro and in animal data, that radiation was actually going to be inducing some of the NF-kappa-B pathways. And then when we started looking at that in patients and looking at these array data and PCR data after initiation of therapy, that appears not to be true in the patients that we've been studying. So we're probably putting that on hold.
Lee, what about more research like this? And not just looking at the tissue, but as I said, other things like interstitial pressure, et cetera.
Just to comment on what Joel's just said, when you do those subsequent biopsies, I never know whether you're looking at an effect of therapy or resistant cells. So the difference between the pre and post biopsy, I'm not always sure that we know what to expect or what the readout's going to be there.
I agree there's a concern there. Our biopsies are done very early, and so like 24 hours after the first dose of radiation to help minimize that. If you do it, you know, 4 or 5 weeks after, or as some people have done at the time of surgery, you really have no idea. But we're intentionally doing it very early to get around that problem or minimize it.
I completely agree with Joel that the endpoint for these kinds of trials ought to be PCR. We had a 3-year debate with our good friends at CTAP, where they absolutely forbade us from using PCR as the endpoint, and we're using local regional recurrence as the endpoint, which we know from previous NSABP studies does not correlate with outcome. So the 1,600 sample size for R04 is based on not PCR, but a local regional recurrence endpoint, because that was the agreement that we finally reached with CTEP. So we have about 612 patients randomized. It's accruing. It seems to be picking up once the Oxali amendment went through and everybody familiarized themselves with it. So it will accrue. If PCR is the endpoint, I mean, it doesn't take many, many patients to determine what the effect of Oxali is going to be on PCR.
What was the power estimate when you wanted to do PCR? How many patients did you need?
Probably for PCR, I mean, judging from what our lapatinib trial is in breast, would be about 600 patients.
Dan? One of the issues, is, as was stressed earlier, is that PCR is in the eye of the beholder. And if PCR is the endpoint, do you have a central pathology review? Because if you don't, it's going to be all over the map. And there was a recent Xelox plus cetuximab that had a 12% path CR rate, which is no better than 5-FU. I collected the 18 phase 1-2 studies out there with about 500 patients, and the PCR rate ranges from anywhere from 12 to 50%. And I don't think that's a difference in treatment. I think it's a difference how you look at PCR. So it's a very difficult endpoint.
Sure, but in a trial this size, you're going to have the variability from the local pathologists, even without central review, is going to be well distributed.
Was PCR at least described in the protocol?
I beg your pardon?
Was PCR described in
PCR,
the protocol?
Yes.
And the pathologist actually read it?
You know, I just started to hear about this. I didn't realize this. It's kind of strange intuitively to think about it, to say whether you can define path CR, Joel, but there are cells that it's not clear whether they're really malignant or not in this situation.
Well, there's that, but it's just a matter of how hard the pathologist
looks.
Yeah,
I mean, how many sections? The same is true in breast.
But I also heard there's this issue of cells that... There's cells that are seen sometimes after radiation therapy, and it's not clear whether they're really tumor cells.
Yeah, I mean, it's... But the bias, whatever the bias is, is equally distributed.
And what are you thinking about the next step, Norm? When do you think you're going to hopefully finish accrual here?
We're not selling the next trial just yet. We think that we'd really be very, very pleased to finish R04 as quickly as possible. Next logical step would be to introduce bevacizumab into the setting.
Would you see doing that now, or would you need more data to do that? And besides the issue that you got a trial up and running, but do you think right now there's enough justification to look at Bev in a randomized fashion in this situation?
I don't think so. I don't think there's enough. I think there's some very exciting preliminary data that I think we're going to be addressing, and I think it certainly has a place. And their PCR as an endpoint in a smaller trial, I think, would be very compelling.
Any thoughts about how Bev is, if we did study it, how it would play out in this neoadjuvant situation with the radiation therapy, Joel?
I think it's really much too early to say. I think there's really very little data on it right now, and it's interesting, but no, I think it's much too early.
Herb?
I think that we have to be very cautious about that particular drug in combination with other agents that cause significant mucosal toxicity. There's a GI perforation rate with chemo, and the amount of mucosal and bowel damage from radiation is far larger with radiation. When the PACE study with chemo plus another drug which can augment GI toxicity, the side effects may be either additive or either synergistic. And of all of the agents so far looked at, I think the radiation and bevacizumab need to be looked at. The Willett study, which Lee will, I guess, get to, there are a couple caveats. First, when they went to the higher dose, 10 versus 5, even though they're very small sample size, there was, you know, enough excess toxicity to drop down the dose. And if true, that has huge implications for therapeutic index if indeed there's a segregation of toxicity seen after only a few doses in that context. The other is a lot of these studies with radiation may or may not be looking at surgical post-op endpoints, because a lot of these are being driven by either tolerability endpoints or biological endpoints. And there may be a lot of safety data or other efficacy data which won't come out from these pilot studies until much larger, real legitimate phase 2 studies get done.
Dan, final comment?
You articulated more things than I did about my concerns with bevacizumab, why it needs to be studied more. I was worried also about the late effects, and for that reason in our institution, our study is pre-op Xelox plus cetuximab for 2 cycles while we're waiting for the radiotherapist to get their act together. And then they get biopsied. We're sending tissues to Heinz Lenz, actually. And then they get radiation. We're turning them to head and neck cancer patients. So they get radiation, capecitabine, oxaliplatin, cetuximab. And so far, the toxicity has been marginal, if any. It's no different from the head and neck trials that we just published in JCO. We were concerned about mucosal toxicity. And part of the problem has been is these pre-op, just as in Dave Cunningham, Ian Chow's data, the pre-radiation chemotherapy with biologic was so effective that there was nothing to biopsy before they started radiation, so we're not going to be able to submit tissue.
Can I just clarify what other pilot or any kind of trials right now are going on in rectal cancer looking at neoadjuvant biologics, either Bev or cetuximab?
Well, we were starting one with panitumumab, which we are not proceeding with.
Well, I know the MD Anderson one, as you said, is just about ready to close. Is there another Bev trial out there, a pilot study? I mean, I was kind of surprised after Chris Willett's stuff that people weren't at least looking at this.
Yeah. Not a comment on Bev, but a comment on cetuximab. The German group that put neoadjuvant radio chemotherapy into the New England Journal of Medicine and as standard of care did look at Xelox plus cetuximab as neoadjuvant therapy, and Joel might know better, that they were actually very underwhelmed by the PathCR rate. They kind of decreased their PathCR rate compared to historic controls by 50%.
I saw that data, and I alluded to it earlier, but it stands so outside one's expectations.
But, you know, it just, I trust the group because they have a lot of experience in neoadjuvant radio chemotherapy. I mean, what else? It's the Zauer group. And, I mean, it just highlights what Herb said earlier. We really need to have prospective trials in order to really get our acts together before we could do that outside of a...
And there's precedent for this. While capecitabine is now being studied formally in comparison to 5-FU, not that long ago, there was a very small set of studies with capecitabine radiation, which then generated interest, and then it became almost a de facto standard of care off of a data set of about 20 patients. And I think, again, with any new therapy, given all the needs, we need to be very clear to segregate what's an interesting research opportunity and what's ready for prime time treatment for patients, even off protocol. And I think while we're discussing lots of very interesting concepts, I think practitioners and patients need to be able to keep straight what's an interesting idea, where it sometimes works but often doesn't and may have unintended consequences, and something which is ready for treatment off protocol.
Do you have any concerns that there aren't any, I'm not hearing about any pilot BEV studies in rectal cancer?
Yeah, I think what's been happening
there
is there a certain number
that are ongoing?
A certain number were started, and until those present their mature data, I mean, there have been multiple presentations at meetings with incremental updates because there's such high-profile studies because of the biological correlates and the novelty. But until those have sort of come in, it's very hard to plan on what to do next.
Final comment from Joel and Bob.
I just wanted to expand on Axel's comment. There are a number of preliminary studies with cetuximab and radiation. And as I looked at those, they almost consistently look worse than just the 5-FU radiation. So it may not be true. They're all very small, but they look sort of consistently worse.
And that is really of some concern because we're expanding it into anal cancer, for instance, rectal cancer. I mean, so adding on, that's the lesson we've learned this year, does not mean it's going to be better.
Joel, was there any excess toxicity that may have compromised the delivery of the radiation?
It's hard to know from those studies, but
Herb, I think
it may not be real.
In a perfect world, it would be great to study everything, meaning let's make sure that CAPE with radiation in a large phase 3 trial is equivalent to 5-FU in radiation. And if the NSABP wants to spend resources on it, so be it. But I think when we have a number of studies that have shown at least non-inferiority of capecitabine to 5-FU in the adjuvant setting, in the metastatic setting, in gastric cancer, in a number of other settings, it's hard for me to say let's spend resources on that particular question. And so I personally think that some of the biologics are probably a more attractive thing to study. One thing that I believe is that it seems to me we have hit some sort of ceiling in terms of the PathCR rate, that really they all sort of hover between 20 and 25%, at least in sample sizes that are believable. I've seen these 35, 40%. But I really think that we're going to have something even beyond Bev or cetuximab to get past the ceiling where we really feel like we're really altering biology more than we are thus far.
But do you think PathCR rate is the appropriate proxy for moving forward on therapies?
I think it's the best one out of the choices we're given. I have to say, despite the caveats of pathology, et cetera, it is the best one. I think in other GI tumors, it's increasingly been associated with improved survival. And I just think, unless you want to do a study for 10 years, you're going to have an endpoint that you can get an answer to and decide whether it's worth pursuing in a bigger trial.
Final comment from Neil.
Yeah, I mean, in my view, the reason to have PathCR as your primary endpoint in a rectal study is that what we need to have as our goal is non-surgical therapy for rectal cancer. And the local control rate with our current therapies is pretty darn good. It's going to be tough to improve upon that with adding additional drugs. So really, we need to be trying to find something that's going to allow us to spare some people surgery, and that's going to be the measure of true success in adding things to our current neoadjuvant
programs. Well, one, sparing
programs.
Surgery and sparing the anus is another very laudable endpoint.